Greetings, Trouble listeners. Welcome back to the Trouble Men podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Yeah, we're here, man.
Yeah.
And it's time. It's the holiday season, and we're here.
Right.
At the lounge, and we're right. The only ones here.
Yeah, well, you know, I was expecting a big crowd, and they may be showing up, you know, as we're conducting this this thing here tonight. And I know traditionally, like when the Iguanas had our steady gig at the Circle Bar for years, that Wednesday night before Thanksgiving was always packed with people. And my theory was that in many cases, people come back home from, you know, wherever they've been hiding out all year long. They have to be with their family. And yeah. It doesn't take them long to be back around the family before they remember why they left town.
Right. So, yeah. That's a good point.
So,
yeah,
so they then have to escape somewhere, you know, go out to a bar or something
we're here.
Yes, we're here.
We've escaped. And so what's been happening with you?
Well, we had a week off last week. I was up in New York City.
Played
a packed show at Joe's Pub there in Lower Manhattan. Also went to a Broadway show the next day.
Oh, what was that?
And, that was Tammy Faye. We talked about that last time.
Oh yeah.
Right. So then
it's already been canceled from Broadway.
Well, it's
they had a 3-week run.
Michael was fantastic. The reviews always singled Michael out as being the highlight of the show. But I saw it. I really enjoyed it. It was
really.
But you know, it's,
so why did it get canceled?
Well, I think a lot of it was the timing of it. You know, coming right after the election, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, people's moods are very dark and very dire and serious. And, you know, I think that one of the reviews I saw said something about laughing it up about Christian nationalism. No thanks. You know, so the fact that, you know, the story
was... You think it was because Elton John wrote it? And people don't like it. I know you're not a big Elton John.
Oh no,
fan.
I am. We've talked. You keep saying that. I'm a huge Elton John.
Well, then
fan.
Why didn't you like his movie? You said you didn't like the biopic on him.
Well, it's. I didn't. It was the production of the movie and the style in which it was written that I didn't care for. I love Elton John's records.
But you don't like it because it was not that gay. But you like Queen, the Freddie Mercury.
Well,
thing.
I it was a very, that was a very you
because
know
that's
direct,
more your gay
it was,
thing.
It was a direct narrative,
the butch kind of gay thing, not the flamboyant gay. You like the S&M gay stuff, as opposed to the flamboyant.
I mean, if I had to
stuff.
Pick one, yeah, that's yeah.
You
yeah,
would
yeah,
like
you
to
know.
Be whipped with a chain.
Well, no,
you know,
no,
and tied up,
no, no, but
and auto asphyxiation, right?
No, no, no.
You know,
no,
you and Michael Hutchins go way back.
Well,
right?
We'll have to see.
You know,
we'll have to see how it pans out. For whatever reason, the critics were unkind to it, and it is going to have a short run.
So why would New York critics be against?
Well,
something like that.
It's
New York.
It's really two people you're talking about.
And,
the two main people that write reviews in the New York papers, they have pretty much a thumbs up, thumbs down on whether a show is going to play or not. So anyway,
how do you know this?
I know that's how it works. I've heard of plenty of shows that get unfavorable
reviews. So you're
reviews.
A Broadway guy. You're an authority on Broadway.
I'm not a Broadway guy. No, I'm just I'm aware of things that go on in the world, even if I'm not directly involved. Anyway, so that was a great whirlwind trip up there. Just 3 days, stayed at a great hotel.
So now that the show's been canceled. So Michael has more free time. So when are you leaving on tour for like 6 months or something?
Well, I don't think we have any plans to take the loose cattle out on the road for a long stretch now, but he will be able to devote more time to loose cattle for sure. And we actually have a New Orleans record release coming up in just a few days. It'll happen before this comes out.
You release this record when?
It came out November 1st on Single Lock Records. We had Reed Watson, the president of Single Lock Records, on the podcast a month or so ago. And the record.
He's a big Broadway guy, isn't he?
No, he's a Muscle Shoals music guy.
So he deals in drugs.
Well, he deals in records.
In order to pay your salary, he has to deal in drugs.
He deals in records. I don't think drugs have anything to do with part of the monetary side of the record label. But
not that you know of.
That I know of, yes.
Right.
The record is getting great reviews. Someone's Monster. Anyway, got back into town on Wednesday. Had to go right into rehearsal Wednesday night for a Susan Cowsill show I played this past week, and then we did that on Friday, and then had the Iguanas out playing a matinee show in front of the Kingpin.
Oh, and that's always dangerous. There's cars there.
Well, they closed the block.
Cars are always moving in front of the
Kingpin.
Well,
no, they had so many people.
And people are throwing bowling balls at the Kingpin, right?
Well, you not know? That I saw, but, you know, I guess that's always a possibility. But they had a larger crowd than they've ever had before for one of those afternoon matinees. So it was a tremendous show by the Iguanas. God bless all the community that came out, had their whole families with them, a lot of toddlers. A lot of people from my high school.
And that's what
class.
You're into, toddlers, no, right? I like the young kids.
I like to see children enjoying the music. It's really? it's sweet to see young families.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's encouraging. All is not it's not doom and gloom everywhere. You know, you have hopeful families with the young kids and, you know, the promise of tomorrow.
The only doom and gloom is on Broadway.
Well, I don't know. I think in general, you know, we're fighting against the tide of a lot of people. You know, I understand, you know, it's now speaking of that, Manny, it's Thanksgiving. Are you planning on having people over at your house tomorrow?
I wasn't planning on it, but my wife.
Your wife was planning on it.
Yeah.
Well, now, a question I have, and this has been in the news since the election. A lot of people say, well, you know, it's okay if you need to uninvite people in your family if you suspect that they voted the wrong way.
Oh well,
you can shun them. Is that something you're planning on doing? Have you uninvited certain people as your wife cut them off?
Well,
the list?
If it was up to me, I wouldn't
You'd
invite
everybody.
Over. People I like and people I dislike. I wouldn't invite everyone. You know, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's like after all this shit that's going on, you know, what's there to be thankful for? You know, what are you thankful for?
Oh, there's so much, Manny.
What is that?
So I mean, you know, we live in the greatest time ever to exist as a human on the planet. You know, we had less disease. Yes, 100 years ago, we had people that were presidents, rich people, captains of industry, who would regularly lose children, not one, several children, to diseases that are easily prevented now.
And, so that's what you're thankful for.
Well, I mean, among other things, yes, we have more abundance, we have less starvation, and you know, it's we're.
I don't know what news you're watching.
We are moving. Well, the news is geared.
Well, I'm
to
always
scare
thankful
people.
For alcohol.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Alcohol.
Yeah, we have the.
And I'm really thankful right now. You know what? Because they brought the McRig back for an unlimited time. And you can also buy a gallon of the sauce, McRib sauce, for a limited time at McDonald's.
It's a limited time?
Limited time only.
Okay, well, what's the deal? What's the false scarcity that they do with the...
like when they brought out the Ford LTD, Ford Limited. Well, it's limited to as many as they can sell. You know,
they kept that in production for about 30 years.
And
too.
I'm also thankful for all those years abortion was legal. Because I banged so many women in my life. I think I had to thank those doctors at least 12 times.
It's good that we have the option. You know, these choices.
Yeah,
freedom to choose.
Hey, what about gas station fried chicken? I'm thankful for gas station.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's some of the best. That crispy, crunchy chicken. It's two K's.
Yeah.
They're only one K from KKK with that crispy, crunchy
it's
chicken.
The perfect amount of K's.
It is. Any more would be too many. But it's delicious, isn't it? It's you can't shake your head. You have to say.
No, this is the only city where you get better fried chicken at the gas station than you do from like a real restaurant.
Well, you know, the crispy crunchy chicken is the fastest growing chain in the whole country because they operate in gas stations, but it's a consistent product.
Yeah. I wonder if it tastes as good when you go up north as it does down here.
Well, I don't know if they have it all the way up north, but certainly below the Mason-Dixon line, it's pretty ubiquitous, you know, and it's as good. Just, you know, it's what makes it not as good as if it's not fresh, but it usually is. So I like it either way.
Under a hot lamp, that's pretty fresh.
Sure, fresh enough for me.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, just want to pay the low price.
Well, you know, I like. I like.
But I'm also
like.
Thankful mm-hmm. for that. My disdain for people is alive and kicking.
Well,
you know, I'm thankful for that. That I still can't stand people. You know, they do nothing for me. They're the worst. And I'm also thankful that my family is thousands of miles away.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. So
your nuclear family or your extended family?
Well, family.
Okay.
You know, I mean, some are in town, but they're not coming over.
Oh, okay.
You know.
So it's mostly just friends coming over to your Thanksgiving.
Well, my wife's friends.
Your wife's friends,
yeah,
right.
I don't really care for these people. You know, that's why you're never invited.
Sure. Well, I have been invited at times, but I have to host my own family's deal, and they'll be, I think, 17 strong tomorrow over at my house.
Oh, you make a count.
Well,
how much do you charge for them to come in, Renee?
You know, try to have
people.
A sliding scale. You
okay.
know, we have it's a suggested.
So you have
donation.
A senior discount for your parents.
Sure, I usually pay for them.
Yeah, you'll pay for them to come over.
That's 17 favors you can call in later.
Yeah.
Sure, absolutely, man. I'm keeping a record of it. I got a notebook. Well, so what's been going on with you? Are you did you have to work today?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Work today.
So has the binge started already?
The what?
The binge. Have you been tying one on? You don't seem like it. Seems like you're waiting for your binge drinking.
Oh no, I don't understand what binge drinking means. I just drink.
Okay. I think that's what it means, but some people want to characterize
binge drinking, man, that you just drink like a bunch at one time.
Well,
and then you stop. Isn't that what binge means?
Well, I mean, you always have to sleep, right? So you have to stop at some point.
Well, I don't sleep. I pass out.
Well, okay.
There's a difference. There's a huge difference
saying that someone passed out is just an ugly way to say that they fell asleep.
Okay. Well, I don't know. But listen, I was at the market, and usually I don't really talk to the cashiers at the market because I just want to get in and out.
Okay.
Know, I just want to... And I decided to talk to this one guy, and it was the biggest mistake of my life because he was a stutterer. And there was like a huge line. It's holiday shopping. You know, people are getting their stuff for their food and, you know, their dinners and all that kind of stuff. And this guy was a stutterer. And people were so pissed off at me because I made conversation with him.
It was slowing down the operation.
Yeah, it was slowing down. And it was the 20 items or less.
Oh.
You know. So anyway, but he seemed like a good kid.
Yeah, yeah. I like the workers over there at our grocery store.
No, it was at a different grocery store.
Different one,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I go to grocery stores for certain things.
Oh, okay.
You know. Let me ask you something, you know.
Okay.
What does legally blind mean?
So legally blind, this has come up on the podcast before. Actually, I think the Reed Watson podcast, it came up.
Okay.
And so that
all
would
right,
be...
Maybe I talked about
that. That would be... Right. No, I don't think you did. But that would be where, you know, you actually can see a little bit, just not well enough to maybe drive a car or, you know, read.
So what
a
is
sign.
Legally deaf? Can you be legally deaf?
That's a good question, man.
You know?
I've never heard anyone say that. You know, they use the term hard of hearing.
Right, but I mean, can you be legally deaf?
I mean, I don't know that that you get any sort of legal.
Oh, what does illegally blind mean?
Well, I've never heard that one.
Can you be illegally blind?
That's another good question.
You know?
I've never heard that.
This is the stuff that keeps me up.
Okay,
at night,
sure.
And
then
I pass out.
Right, right.
You know.
I guess if you fake it blindness to get a disability check, that would be...
There you go.
Okay, fraud, right. That would be...
Yeah,
all right.
Be fraud, well, okay. Then.
Among
yeah.
other things.
So you know about this.
Okay. I mean, I've tried...
You've done
I've,
this
I've dabbled.
Before. You've dabbled? You've dabbled in the fraud?
Well,
all
you know,
right.
Well,
that's okay.
The Troubleman podcast likes a certain whiff of larceny, you know? It's it's right up our alley.
Yeah.
Hello, all right. Got some familiar faces greeting us as they walk in the door.
Who's that?
You know, just people that are looking at us like they know
they smell
what we're doing.
Familiar.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you that. I don't know if they look familiar.
As you drive down Claiborne Avenue, I don't know if you've noticed this guy who now has about 10 shopping carts that are full of shit. You have to. You can't just nod. You have to say it.
I've been watching this guy gradually get more shopping carts.
He's accumulating,
and he's been migrating down Claiborne like a couple blocks at a time.
On the neutral ground there.
Well, he's kind of on the side. Sometimes you see him down by Lowe's or down by.
He was down by Lowe's.
Water board.
He was down by Lowe's with 6 shopping carts, and then I saw him with 9 shopping carts down by Jefferson Avenue.
Totally filled with stuff.
Yeah.
and like tarps over it, and God knows what he has in there. Now, my question, I have several questions. So how do you think he can move all those carts? So you can't push 10 full shopping carts all lashed together at once, one guy.
Well, I'm thinking there's some really small people hiding in the shopping carts. That at night they come out and push them.
You think he has a crew, some goblins
or
some
And they
some
crawl
elves?
Back in there. They sleep in the day and they push the carts at night.
I hadn't considered that possibility. I was just imagining, like, does he at certain, you know, dark hours... move three or two at a time.
Well, no. Well, listen. If you go to your local supermarket, you see those box boys moving 30 shopping carts at one time.
Yeah, but these are not inside of each other. These are all end to end.
He has them connected somehow.
Filled well, you must have them roped together, but filled with stuff. I mean, it just seems rather unwieldy to be going.
So you have a problem with him?
I'm just curious. It just begs a lot of questions, you know.
He seems like a character.
Person, you know, he's
well,
a homeless guy.
Sure, sure.
You know, what's
But you know, like a lot of homeless people, you see them camp somewhere. They have a compound that they set up underneath somewhere. You know, some. But and this guy
he
seems
just doesn't want to settle down.
He's on the move.
Place.
I know. It's fascinating to me.
And what I like about some of these homeless people have crazy stories, and they were super successful in life, and then everything fell apart. Some of them owned businesses and did really cool things with their lives before they became homeless.
And you got to ask yourself, what was that one straw that
that
broke the whole thing apart? And I often think that could be me.
We could all be one straw away and we don't even know it.
It's terrifying.
Way to put a damper on
well,
the show.
Well, no, we have other.
Way to bring it down. We were so high there for a while.
It's a cycle. We gotta go. It's a sine curve. You know, we gotta rise up high and then dip down low.
It's like riding the Zephyr.
Yeah. Riding the Zephyr. Riding the snake. Chasing the dragon. There's some sad news. Other sad news in the that I saw. Chuck Woolery passed away.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Chuck Woolery, host of the groundbreaking Love Connection.
Yeah.
And also, I remember maybe even before or after that, seeing him as the host of the Playboy Playmate Olympics. Remember they used to have that on the Playboy Channel?
He was also the very first host of Wheel of Fortune.
Okay.
Before Pat Sajak.
I saw that in his obituary.
Yeah. He had a huge cock, apparently.
Huh. Okay. Well, he was a big guy.
He was very well hung.
He was a big guy, tall guy.
They called him Woolery for some reason, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, I worked those Playboy Olympics.
Really?
Competition. Yeah, in 1984, when the actual Olympics were in Los Angeles, Hugh Hefner decided to have the Playboy Olympics at the mansion there, and an art director friend of mine who I worked with at the studios, he got hired to art direct it, and he says, "Do you want to help out?" And I said, "Sure, yeah, why not?" So basically,
right,
my art direction was just giving these Playboy bunnies towels to dry off.
Okay.
And, you know, enthusiasm.
That's a tough job, man.
It was a tough gig. Enthusiasm. But it was a good gig because it was close to where I was living.
All right.
And the Playboy Mansion is a fucking cool place, man. Very cool place.
Did you get to go hang out there at nighttime?
I met lots of people there.
Schmooze around
lots
the grotto.
Lots of degenerates there.
Yeah, who would be like Tony Curtis? I know he was kind of a fixture there.
Yeah, he was also a crack fiend, too.
Oh, okay.
Oh, huge. Fucking crackhead.
Huh, okay.
What was this? 84. OJ was there.
OJ. Okay.
Yeah.
Star-studded lineup.
Yeah. You had people, a lot of sitcom stars from the 70s whose career were dying out. Dick Gaudier. Dick Gaudier played Jaime in Get Smart.
Oh, that guy. Wow.
Yeah, Dick Gaudier.
Man, that's a real deep pull. Jaime and Get Smart.
Don Adams was there a lot.
Don Adams, okay.
Yeah, he's an angry fuck, Don Adams. Yeah. Very, very unhappy person, Don Adams. Kind of like our new head of the health department that our President Trump has appointed, RFK Jr.
Oh, yeah. He's quite a piece of work, isn't he?
Yeah, this guy. I saw something on him just a few days ago where he's calling to make America healthy again.
Right.
This is what he said. And the first thing I thought to myself was, well, let's start with you, because this guy looks awful.
Well,
he looks like a fucking burnt bacon, you know, overburnt bacon. I like my bacon well done, but this guy,
that's ridiculous.
He looks like fucking, you know, horrible, man.
Well, the thing I noticed about him, I mean, yeah, the skin looks weird, the voice is weird.
Yeah.
You can't necessarily help that, but he's so jacked. He's on so much like testosterone or human growth hormone or who knows what. I mean, is anybody going to comment on that? Should we all be on DECA or some sort of steroids?
Well, no, we should all just look at him and say, hey, man, let's start with you.
Be jacked at 70 years old.
Yeah, and look, and I just can't believe his wife is, what's her name from?
Yeah, Cheryl Hines.
Yeah, Cheryl Hines. I mean, you'd think she'd know a little better, but I guess after 12 seasons with Larry David, she just is like confused.
The heart knows what it wants, I guess.
Yeah. So he says, make America healthy again, but no, you can't have free health care.
Right, well, that's it, yeah.
By the way.
By the way, you know, anyway, well, he seems like a good guy.
Well, you know.
I just hope, I wonder what his dad would think of him, though.
Yeah. It's that's a tough proposition.
Yeah, what would his dad think, but his dad got assessed.
Yeah, we'll never know. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll never know.
Well, maybe we should get our guest in here, huh?
Yeah,
we've been prattling
let's
on for a while.
Okay. Here. He seems like a good guy.
He is a good guy. This is a guy I've known for many, many years. I continue to be fascinated about new wrinkles that I discover about him. He's a fantastic piano player, singer, drummer, excellent band leader and frontman, also an audio engineer, producer, fantastic live sound man.
And you're a handyman around the house, I hear, too.
Absolutely
is.
Is. He,
it's true.
That's all true. He plays with such bands as Mem Shannon and The Membership, Dr. Sick and the Late Greats, one of our recent guests, Broke Down Streetcar, Captain Buckles, has a few friends of mine in that band, all kinds of groups. We're going to get into all that and more, but without further ado, the great Mr. Rob Davis. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on.
What a cool place to do a podcast from. It's Snake and Jake's Uptown, huh?
Yeah, well, we've got it here in the heart of the Klempire. We've got it all to ourselves tonight.
And I've been here a lot, but I never had the feeling like I was here on business before until tonight.
Well, monkey business.
Monkey business.
Well, it's always a good place to go because no one's ever here.
Well,
you know.
not this early.
Yeah, it
gets pretty jumping about from midnight to 7 or midnight to 5 or so. But okay, so as I said, you live right here in this square, and I know you've lived had a couple of sojourns outside of this. But were you born right here in this neighborhood?
Well, I lived in River Ridge when I was born. I was born at a Baptist hospital.
So was I. All right.
There we go. See?
Nice.
Before it was Ochsner Baptist. Just,
yes.
Just Baptist.
On Napoleon Avenue.
Yeah. So I'm, I guess, a local.
New Orleans boy, for
New
sure.
New Orleans boy.
So so you're born here at Baptist Hospital, and you lived in Reefer Ridge, as we like to call it on the podcast. Manny has family from there. His wife's family's all from Reefer Ridge. So when did you start living in this neighborhood?
You know, my family moved us up to Maine when I was a kid for a while, and then when we came back down here, that's when we moved uptown.
Now, why were you living in Maine?
I think they thought it was a safer place to raise kids or something along those lines.
Huh.
And so my dad had taken a job up there.
That's a long way away. It's as far as you can get from
that
New
Orleans. That is a huge white flight.
It is.
Yeah.
Talking about white flight, man. That's like your dad and mom. Now, are they still around to explain themselves?
My mom is just up the street right now. My dad passed away. My mom's still with us. So.
Okay. So what did your dad do up there?
He was the provost of the University of Southern Maine.
Ah.
He was
academic.
Okay. Academics. He taught archaeology and things like that.
Oh, okay.
And
so he took the gig, and you're what age? How old are you?
I'm 39 now.
No. Then.
When I was then?
Two or three or something?
Three when we moved up there, and then I think 15 when we came back.
Oh, wow. So you went to elementary school and high school up there in Maine?
I did all that. Yeah, they made sure to bring us back to New Orleans every year.
Was that in Bangor?
What's
Bangor,
that?
Maine?
No, Bangor. They call it Bangor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's South Portland, Maine, right outside of Portland. And it's beautiful up there. I wasn't crazy about the people up there. They're not very friendly.
Oh.
But the
Because you were from New Orleans. They didn't
down here we talk to strangers in the supermarket.
Right.
If you're checking out, it's like, how you doing? And I think that's like a Afro-Caribbean influence on that New Orleans has that New England doesn't have.
If you do that to people up there, they think you're trying to scam them or something.
They think you're a psycho. They give you weird looks. Nobody wants to talk to a stranger up there.
So you always felt like a fish out of water a little bit?
I would say so, yeah. This always felt like home.
Okay. Now, but you did start studying and playing music up there?
I did. I got started on piano when I was 5 or 6, taking lessons.
Okay. Was that something your parents encouraged or that you demanded of them? Or
I had to beg them for lessons for a while.
Nice. Okay.
And they finally bought me one of those little Casio keyboards, the little $60 keyboard.
Right.
And they said, if you keep it up, then we'll get you a piano. And then eventually they got an upright piano in the house.
Nice. I started off with a Fender Rhodes, and it was like, because my father wanted one for his band. He's like, if you keep playing, eventually we may get you an upright.
And I would love to have a Fender Rhodes. I don't know a lot of people that have one anymore.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to get that piano at one point, and I thought, you know, it's so heavy. I moved that thing so many fucking times as a kid. I gave it to somebody else who knows what happened to it. It was a 73 suitcase model. So you were self-motivated as a musician from an early age.
Yeah, when I was in kindergarten, I wanted to be a composer like Mozart and Beethoven at the time. I was big onto that stuff. And
why?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I guess sometimes you just pick something.
Were your parents playing that music in the house or something?
No.
Did you see Amadeus or Rock Me Amadeus?
No, I just randomly got into it and just like picked that as my thing.
Right.
And,
really? And how old? What year is this?
This is when I was 5 or 6 back in kindergarten.
So what year is this?
So this would have been 90, 91, something like that.
You're a kid.
Yeah.
1991, okay.
But I remember writing a little book in kindergarten about what you want to be when you grow up, and I said, I want to be a composer like Mozart.
Nice. And they all stared at you.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, it wasn't until I was at Tulane going to school and I saw these little Asian girls that played classical piano and they were so good. And I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to be that good. That's when I stopped pursuing classical piano and started doing other stuff.
Okay.
There's just so many people.
Your
so
parents
good.
Moved back.
They moved back.
And with your sisters and brothers?
It was me and my brother, and we all came back.
Uh-huh.
And
you went to what high school?
I went to Ben Franklin.
Okay.
I didn't even know that about you.
I did. I went there for a year, and then I got kicked out for not getting good enough grades.
Okay. It's a shock if you're not used to, if you don't know what to expect. There's not a lot of hand-holding there. It's kind of, they throw you in the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like college, you know, but as a 14-year-old or something. Now, you know, here at Snake and Jake's, we have not one, but two Ben Franklin alumni and the bartending. Vince, our bartender tonight, went to graduated from Ben Franklin.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
There's a bartending school at Ben Franklin.
It's in the bathroom, the boys' bathroom on the third floor.
It's a drinking school.
They aim high there at Ben Franklin, apparently, you know, bartending, you know. But anyway, so the Asian girls, there's still Asian girls at campus. I work at
and
that
And they still
campus.
Play great, I'm sure.
No, they're the most annoying kids all, you know. And I think they're all spies. To be honest with you, you got Asian kids from China going to the business school, getting all this business experience. They don't speak a fucking word of English. How are they understanding anything?
They must speak enough to understand.
No,
it.
They don't.
Okay.
They don't. And I've talked to business school professors, and they all tell me they translate it on their phones.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
Yeah, they translate it on their phones. And once they graduate, they don't stay here to give their knowledge to here. To our country, they go back and take everything they learned from us back to China to put it back on us.
Right.
You know?
Well,
fucking Chinese, man. Yeah, I don't know, man.
They are one of our international adversaries.
Yeah.
So you
and they're all rich. They're all wearing the finest clothes, too. It's like they've got the $200 Air Jordan shoes and all this kind of stuff. And then they complain about the price of a book. You know?
Well, you know,
communism. And that's when their English comes out. They go, but listen, this is it.
Oh.
This is it.
Okay. And then all of a sudden they can speak perfect English.
Yeah, they can speak perfect English. All
right.
Fucking spies. Well,
so you go to Ben Franklin, and where do you finish high school here?
I never did. I got kicked out, and I started going to Tulane because my dad worked there, and I was able to go there for free, so I didn't want to turn that down.
Right. So you just got a GED and went to college.
And that's when you fell for the Asian chicks.
Exactly. No, I was 16 years old, and I was at Tulane. Man. I felt like an odd man out because I was like, they're all going to know I'm only 16, 17.
Oh, they probably dig that, you think.
Nobody called me out on it, so I felt like I slid under the radar.
Well, you have a very serious demeanor to you, you know. You have
a serious
bearing, so I could see that, you know. You can't really get a read on you. You're not like a jokey kid, and never have been, even when you were young.
And now are you married?
No, I'm formerly married.
Oh, to an Asian woman?
I wish.
Oh, okay.
No, I got two great kids, and I'm flying solo.
Oh,
it's great. It's really great.
So I think I met you right around this period. Maybe you were you got out of Tulane, and at some point you're working for Jimmy Glickman at New Orleans Music Exchange.
Oh, yeah. I started just hanging out at that store when I was 15, 16.
Oh, okay.
Just going in and looking at the gear and talking to, and that was back when Paul Webb used to work there.
Right.
And Andy Kurtz, and it was a little family of music lovers. And
what a great store, huh?
It was great.
What a great guy Jimmy Glickman was.
So eventually he would start paying me to work for him and to organize the gear. And he sent me out on a sound gig with one of his sound guys to help set up the gear. And I was watching what he was doing with all the knobs. And he taught me a few tricks. And I told Jimmy, I'm gonna start being a sound guy. And he laughed at me. And then about 2 years later, he was calling me to do sound on gigs, which was great. And he eventually got me the gig at the Rockin' Bowl after Katrina.
So while you were still working there, I believe, did you start your own Uptown Audio production company?
I did. That was right before Katrina in 2005. I bought a sound system, and I started Uptown Audio Productions, which rents sound systems.
Right. And you were like 20 years old or something?
Yeah, I was 20 years old when I started that. And I had dabbled in music. I had a band when I was younger. In my teenage years, I guess, I did a band called Idol, and we used to play Hi-Ho Lounge and Tipitina's, like the homegrown night at Tipitina's, stuff that didn't pay any money.
Right.
And the Dixie Tavern, that was one of our regulars, which was pretty cool. A lot of punk rockers. We had a big mosh pit one time in there.
All right.
It was but we would only make $30 a gig, sometimes even $6 or $7 a gig.
Yeah.
And so I got it in my head, there's no way I'm going to make any money playing music. So I guess that's why I started doing sound, just so I could be around music.
Okay.
And as much as I could.
Now, so then I guess as you said, Jimmy Glickman and your sound production company winds up putting you at Rockin' Bowl as the sound man there, regular house sound man, huh?
Yeah, which was really great because I got to see like so many great players, including Eddie Bowe and Snook Seglin and a bunch of these guys in Buckwheat Zydeco that are no longer with us.
Yeah, man.
And
giants.
It was amazing.
Now, who's the jerk that owns that place again? What's his name?
Oh, you're talking about John Blanchard.
Yeah.
John's a good guy. John's misunderstood. No, I've always had a you know, John's mistake in recent years has been to get political, you know.
That's
it's like
the worst decision he ever made.
There's nothing good to be gained from that, you know.
Well,
it's like,
no, I knew before that before he got political, he was a jerk, if you ask me.
I always had a good relationship with John. John,
yeah, he paid you.
John treated the Iguanas as well or better than any other club owner in our entire career.
But I remember that time years and years ago where you asked me to tell some jokes. You guys were playing there for the Christmas show.
Oh, yeah.
And I started doing religious jokes, and you kicked me off the stage.
Yeah.
You wanted to get paid because an asshole.
I know John is a real devout Catholic, a real Marianite, you know, the Virgin Mother. He's real big on that. So I could tell that wasn't going to play well with John. So I had to jump in there. But that's when I for sure first meet you. Is working at Rockin' Bowl.
Yeah, which was great. I ended up getting to work with the Iguanas and when I was 22, I think, we started working together.
Yeah, so we had Austin Thompson was our sound man for about 10 years. We got him when he was 20. By the time he was 30, he was burned out on the music business, 10 years. We took the best years of his life. I talked to him not too long ago. He's doing well in Nashville. So you were next up in the rotation, and you came out on the road with us at 22, as you say, as the road manager and sound engineer.
And the van driver.
Van driver, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, we all shared some driving duties, but what I found out about you, like Austin, which Austin had the same ability, you could go into a club with a really shitty PA and look at it and go, oh, man, they got this thing all screwed up. Look, this is going to take me a half hour to reconfigure this thing, but it'll be worth it. Y'all go fuck off. Come back in a half an hour. And you were that kind of guy who even as a very young person, had great expertise in you know, sound, you know, the way a system is designed, gain structure and all that. And you're fucking impeccable.
I do enjoy troubleshooting, you know, sound issues. Because it makes sense to my brain, because I can look at the signal of all the sound and usually figure out what the problem is. Oh. And then when you fix it, you get that satisfying feeling of like, ah, that's better. You know, now it sounds good.
right. So. Now, you recently helped me out, did me a solid when at my synagogue, there was the guy that runs the building manager, whatever, was saying, oh, we're getting a lot of complaints about the sound system. They want to spend a whole bunch of money to get this new system. Would you come look at these bids that I have? And I'm like, well, look, I use sound systems. I don't run or buy sound systems. I'd like to bring a friend of mine who actually is an expert at this. And you came in and you looked at the proposal and you said, yeah, those are not bad proposals. You might need this or that. And I said, well, look at what they have. And you went and looked at what they had and you spent about 45 minutes or an hour dialing stuff out, changing channels on the wireless stuff. And at the end of that, they didn't need to spend any money because you had fixed it all.
Yeah, that's always a good feeling when you can save somebody $40,000 in about 45 minutes.
Incredible, man, yeah. Which is what I suspected. But I was thank you so much for that. You know, I'll never forget that. Now, as time goes on, your business in New Orleans was increasing, and so it just worked out. You didn't come on the road with us. Now, at some point, you went to the West Coast during all this time?
I did. I moved to Oregon for a year outside of Corvallis.
Now, why? What prompted that?
Well, I was about to get married, and my fiance wanted to take a job out there, and she was pretty hell-bent on moving out there, and I decided, what the hell? I'll go out there and check it out. And honestly, I loved it so much. If we hadn't gotten pregnant and had a kid coming, we probably might have just stayed out there because it's really nice. Aside from 9 months of rain, yeah, it's pretty nice out there.
Now, is Corvallis, that's in...
It is below Portland.
Right, yeah.
It's below Salem and it's above Eugene.
But that's is that where Oregon or Oregon State's at?
I'll mix them up. I think it's Oregon State. OSU is in Corvallis.
Okay. So it's below Portland. Is it above? It's on the coast or central?
It's close to the coast. It's in the valley, so it's in the same.
Right. Okay. Because I spent some time on the coast of Oregon, Coos Bay.
In prison.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Coos Bay, Oregon, where the Free Willy was there at the aquarium. The original Free Willy. He had a bunch of stunt doubles.
Huh. Okay.
All over the country, all over the world, Free Willy, but the original one.
The original one
is in Coos Bay, and that's also where they filmed One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh.
In Coos Bay at that insane asylum.
What
right
a classic.
Bay. Yeah.
Man, Nurse Ratched was such a bitch, man.
Yeah. I kind of had a thing for
yeah,
her.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
And I like that assistant nurse of hers, that little Latina chick in the film. I forget her name, but she was kind of cool.
Right on.
So when I was out there, I got this gig teaching at a rock school. It was called the Corvallis School of Rock.
Oh, okay.
And it was a husband and wife, and the husband, and they had split up, and he was the one that taught all the music to the kids. And she did the vocal coaching and ran the business. So she hired me to come and teach drum and bass and guitar and piano lessons to all these kids.
Okay.
That was a blast. And they would give us... They would give us a camp in the summer. It was a 5-day camp, and they would put these beginner kids, some of them never played before, And I had until Friday, and then we put a concert on Friday with they had to play three songs. And we only had 5 days to teach these little kids three songs. And then
and it probably sounded like Daniel Enwa at Jazz Fest.
Oh, man.
Right?
Sounded like, I don't know if you guys saw Bob Dylan at Jazz Fest about like 15 years ago, but it sounded kind of like that.
Okay. Oh. And by the end of the week, they were all strung out on dope.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is a good time to take a little break, I think,
yeah.
And we'll come back and get into your whole musical career, which is a revelation to me. But Manny, why don't you tell the people?
All right, people, you know the drill. We'll be right back.
People want to hear a song about how everything's going to be all right. And we're laying on our feet every time we fall. But I'm staying way down low, so when it all comes crashing down, I might just still be standing tall. They tell me keep your chin up and put a smile on your face. Nobody wants to hear bad news. But when I'm feeling down and out, I still got music left to play. Cause you don't have to smile to sing the blues.
And we're back.
Yes.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Yes.
I am Renee Coleman. Back with our guest, Mr. Rob Davis.
Yeah.
Now, Rob, I know you are familiar with the podcast, and as such, you are, you know, you understand that this is a listener-supported operation, something that many of our listeners don't understand, because, I always mention when people support the podcast, and if anybody's been paying attention, you'll notice that there hasn't been any mentions in a number of weeks. So we're kind of running on fumes here, Rob. And
we got to get the word out.
Well, you know, we put out a podcast a week, so the word is out. But anyway, if anybody feels thankful for the Trouble Men podcast and want to give us some support, we have the PayPal and Venmo.
I like the dark meat.
The dark meat.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to give some dark meat for Thanksgiving.
The darker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have those links there, the PayPal and Venmo. Also, we have a Patreon page that affords you several perks like listening to the podcast, or I may come over and mow your lawn at some point if down the road. We shall see. Also, we have the link for the Troubled Men podcast T-shirts. Again, time is nigh for is that the word the time is nigh to place your order if you want them in
the time is now.
Okay, sure. I think that's what that
do
means.
It now.
Yeah.
If you want to get it before
call to action.
Yeah, if you want to get it before
Christmas.
Yeah,
or
Christmas
or Hanukkah,
Day.
Hanukkah.
You got to order
so
now,
Hanukkah
people.
Starts on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Or it is Erev Hanukkah on Christmas Day. So also follow us on social media. That would be Instagram, Facebook. Also rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Cost you nothing. Helps us a lot. Also, you can find my dates at iguanas.com or the Renee Coleman Facebook page, which the links are right there for that as well in the show notes. And
now, when you say dates, that means women?
Well, that
women
means,
you're seeing?
No, club dates.
Oh, club dates.
Club
okay.
Dates that you're playing, dates on the calendar that you'll be playing a gig.
Okay.
You know, we have all this hipster terminology, dates, gigs, sets.
Hey, whatever happened to George Santos?
George
Remember
Santos.
George Santos, that homosexual who lied about his resume. Oh, yeah. A Republican congressman.
Yeah. Well,
whatever happened to that guy?
He lost his seat.
He's
probably doing some cameo appearances, or I think there's a lot of gloating going on. He's a Weasley sort of character there.
Cameos on what? Like reality shows?
No. There's that platform Cameo where you can sign up for. You could maybe do this, Manny, as a personality, and people give you money to do a little video for them, happy birthday
to
someone.
Do I have to take my clothes off?
Well, I mean, that's an option. I'm not saying that would be an upcharge for that, or perhaps an upcharge to keep the clothes on. I don't know. Depends on
cameo,
your audience.
Cameo, huh?
Yeah, Cameo. It's like kind of like OnlyFans or something. I don't know what that is either, really. They're all kind of related. It's a way for people to hustle their ass on the internet.
They had a band called Cameo. You remember that?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I love that
yeah,
band.
Yeah, yeah. Word Up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that guy.
And Word Candy. Up.
Candy, that was a great song. That was a great band, man. That when I was at Loyola Music School, that record, that first Cameo record the one that had Word Up on it was out, and they had some great players on that.
George Santos?
Well, I don't think he was in that band, but that was the era when they had
actually played music.
Oh yeah, all the records were people playing in studios, and there was a lot
of
R&B groups that would play backbeat stuff, but it's all jazz players playing on top of it, and Cameo had a lot of that. They were like R&B band, but kind of avant. That guy was great. Had the tall hair. He was cool. Anyway, so it has nothing to do with
what does Word Up mean?
Word Up is Cherry Coke. That's what I remember from the commercials. But I think it means it's true or something like that.
Oh.
Anyway, I think that's enough of that. Back to our guest, the great Mr.
Well,
Rob.
Well, no, wait a minute. Oh, okay. I heard, mm-hmm. and maybe you'll feel this, our guest here. They're going to get away with NyQuil. NyQuil.
You're going to take it off the shelves?
They're taking NyQuil off the shelves.
What are junkies going to do when they have to detox?
So I've been buying NyQuil like crazy. I'm starting to hoard NyQuil.
Stockpiling.
I'm stockpiling the NyQuil just like I stockpiled the sanitary napkins and all that stuff during the pandemic.
The sponges.
The antibacterial soap.
Okay.
But I hear it's going to be a thing, man. You know, and next they're going to try to get Robitussin, baby.
Ooh, man.
Yeah.
Old time favorite.
Yeah, Robitussin.
Yeah, a lot of high school kids, I think, get strung out on that Robitussin. It's dissociative, you know, like you lose who you are. You drink enough of that shit, you're lost in space.
It's life changing.
It's life changing.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely life changing. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like you're speaking from experience.
Oh, no. So I've heard.
Okay. No, it's outside of my area of expertise, but I'll take your word for that. I know it's popular. Yeah.
But no, can't you
but
just...
But they're not going to get rid of DayQuil.
I was going to say, can't you just drink DayQuil and take a sleeping pill? It's the same thing, or
well,
no?
Where do you get the sleeping pills?
Well, they don't sell those anymore either?
Doane's pills or something? I don't know.
I thought they sold sleeping pills at the pharmacy, but maybe that was 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. You mean
they have Sleepies.
Sleepies?
Yeah, Sleepies. Or no doze, but no doze was
an
anti-sleep.
No, that's the upper.
Yeah,
caffeine, man.
Yeah.
Get you all jacked
Sleepies.
Up.
But anyway.
Yeah, you could maybe combine it with some antihistamines. Those have a certain downer effect when in the
NyQuil
right combinations.
NyQuil and a shot of bourbon.
Okay.
That's the way to go.
Right. Man, when I was 13, my buddy and I wanted to play video games all night, so we took 14 no-dos each. And man, I thought I was going to die.
Yeah. But you kept playing, huh?
We played all night, and we never went to sleep.
Yeah.
I guess it worked, technically.
Yeah. And what game was this?
I think it was...
Pong.
Yeah, it was a Super Nintendo game or something. It was back then. So
okay, so we're talking the 80s, 90s or something?
Maybe 90s, yeah. It's a 90s video game.
Oh, God.
We couldn't get enough.
Okay, well, back to Rob Davis and his musical career. So you and your family are you're with child. You decide to come back to the bosom of your ancestral home here and in this square. I won't say what street you're on. I will say that house, that your family home that I know you as living in, is right across the street from the infamous glass house that John Mooney lived in and really took during some of his declining years. Were you there at the same time that all that was going on?
I don't remember, honestly.
Oh, okay.
I heard he was around there somewhere, but
it was
I don't.
Right across the street.
Okay. Probably so. I probably knew him and waved to him and stuff.
Okay.
But I might not have known who he was.
Right. Okay.
So moving back with your wife and child, this leads to the divorce.
Well, of course. The pandemic will ultimately seal the deal.
Oh, all right. So that was tough for a lot of people.
We had a good little run.
Yeah.
Yes.
But before I moved back, I think something happened to me that made me feel rejuvenated about playing the keyboards, because I was teaching lessons in Oregon, and I got a couple of professional classical piano students that were trying to learn how to play blues. So I put a lesson plan together teaching them like scales and chord notes and modes that they could combine to try to do solos. They wanted to know how to take a blues solo and that type of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And in the course of practicing that stuff, I'd already given up on classical piano like years before that, but practicing that stuff, I thought to myself, man, if I just put a little bit of work in, I could be pretty good at playing the piano.
Okay.
So I started working a little bit on it. And then when I came back in town, I had this band I was playing drums with called Tika and I. It was a Cajun band that had a regular Bourbon Street gig, who I still play with. And I gave up the drum spot to move to Oregon. I was the drummer. So when I came back, they had a drummer at this point, but their fiddle player had left. And the accordion player said, hey, you can come play the keyboards in the fiddle player's spot. So I started doing that. And that got me way stronger as a player, because every song I would take a solo on, that was the format. He would play accordion, he would sing, and then he would be like, go, 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 over and over. And at first, I would get lucky on a good solo every once in a while, but after 3 years of just go, 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 go,
right.
go, I started getting it down.
You'd had enough reps.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And right around that time was when I started playing with Vince Vance and the Valiants.
Vince Vance and the Valiants. That's a legendary New Orleans band that goes back to like the 60s, I think.
Yeah, 1971.
Okay.
Although the guys were playing in the 60s. They were all playing in this, but the band started.
They used to have a guy, Snake, that played in that band, I think.
Yeah.
Had like a big curl right in the middle of it.
They had the professor. They had all these characters. They got their big break opening up for REO Speedwagon and the Allman Brothers at the Warehouse.
Yeah, yeah. The Allman Brothers were like the house band at the Warehouse.
Yeah, and that was like their big break. They were one of the first bands that was bringing back 50s music, like right around the time Sha-na-na and those guys.
Right.
They were like big on the scene doing that before anybody else
many,
had started.
Many
doing
people
it.
Say Sha-na-na was the best band at Woodstock, and they were. I wouldn't disagree.
They might. Yeah. I mean, everything I heard from Woodstock is sloppy, although beautiful but sloppy. So I would
say that with a certain tongue in cheek, but a lot of people sleep on Sha-na-na and they forget
one of the greatest variety shows ever in the early 70s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sha-na-na.
Everybody loves Bowser, right?
Yeah, well.
Well, maybe not everybody, but he's a beloved character.
Yeah.
So you come back and you're showing up on certain mixing spots. I know that as soon as you were available, the Iguanas start getting you to like mix us at Jazz Fest every year.
Oh, that's been so much fun.
And every time at Jazz Fest, people are like, man, sounds great out front. Sounded fantastic. And I'm like, well, we have our own guy. And they're like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. And it's always so comforting to know, it's always such a quick turnover on stage and you got to scramble to get your monitor mixes together and all that shit. And to know that you're out there and going to handle it on your end, that, without anything, it goes without saying that it's such a comfort. So during that time, I guess the pandemic happens. And people are doing live streams and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching one on Benny Grunch. And Carlo's playing drums with Benny Grunch. And I see you playing piano I've never seen you play piano before. And now I knew that you had a studio at your house before that, and we talked about, you know, different recording programs and stuff. So I knew that you dabbled in music, but I just thought it was just that, you know, you just kind of, you're a great sound man. You kind of dabbled as a player. And I see you, I'm going, fuck, man, Rob Davis plays a lot of fucking piano. Look at that. You're playing all this New Orleans piano shit, man, all this left-hand stuff. I'm going, God damn. So I go on a gig with Doug Garrison. I'm saying, man, I saw this thing with Rob Davis. He goes, that's nothing. Have you seen him lead a band? I'm like, no. He goes, wait till you see him lead a band.
No, Benny Grunch is one of my favorite bands I got to play with. And I worked with him for years, helping him set up the sound. And and I would sub for Carlo and Alpo when one of them couldn't make it.
On drums or keyboards.
On drums or keyboards. And Carlo was probably definitely one of my top five drummers in the world that I've ever seen. And yeah. He taught me all kinds of stuff about the drums. And
did he owe you money?
No, he never did.
Okay. Well, you're a lucky one.
Another
then.
Guy that escaped the...
No, I probably owe him money because he taught
all
me,
right. Get
he
away
taught me
from
some
me.
Valuable...
There you go. Manny's talking to the dogs. You know, Manny, last night, we could have done this last night, potentially, but then I saw today that last night was Bring Your Dog to the Bar at Snake and Jake's, and I thought, man, did Manny dodge a bullet on that one?
Fucking hate dogs. Can't stand it.
So you're playing with Benny Grunch, and I guess you were playing with all kind of other bands at this point. Then you actually called me for a gig, and it was Doug Garrison was on the gig, and it was like some kind of Mardi Gras thing a few years ago. And you're playing accordion and keyboard, I think, and you're like fronting the band, talking to the people, calling tunes. I remember you say, you know this tune? I was like, I've heard it. And you go, it's easy. And then we're playing the tune, and you're flashing chord changes with your left hand behind your back to me and talking to the people and singing. I go, fuck, this guy, what doesn't he do, man? Unbelievable.
Jack of all trades. I try to do a little bit of everything.
But really well, man. And you know, it was one of the most surprising things is you do have this kind of retiring, quiet demeanor. But then when you're on the bandstand, it's a different guy.
Yeah, I try to put a show on for sure when I'm and that's something I learned from working with guys like Vince Vance, who is a great entertainer, and Benny Grunch, who incorporates comedy into his act, and that's really great. And just the years of running sound and watching and seeing what works and what doesn't work, I like to think I picked up a few little tricks from some of these amazing guys I got to watch.
Yeah. What an education, man, to hear the cream of the crop of New Orleans and South Louisiana artists like that.
Oh, man, there's so many good ones around here. And the more I traveled, the more I realized we really got a lot of good players in New Orleans.
Yeah. It's we can't appreciate it being here because it's so insular and you just kind of get used to it. You know, I used to have this experience where I'd make records with people from other places and they come here and you know, be working in the studio all day and go to some neighborhood bar to have a drink afterwards, and there'd be some guys playing in the corner, and the people would be like, who were those guys? They're amazing. I go, I don't know, just some guys from the neighborhood. They go, really? That guy's not a huge star? I go, no, nobody knows who he is, man. They go, how is he so fucking good? It's like, because if you're not that good, you can't even get a gig at the corner bar.
It's just like the restaurant business here. You can't open a restaurant with bad food here because it's not going to last.
Right.
I guess you got to be a pretty good player to get on the gig scene.
So during that time, or before that, you had fallen into this the Bourbon Street thing of playing. So I know nowadays you have like six steady weekly Bourbon Street gigs.
I do. I guess I'm appreciative of the Bourbon Street gigs, but my goal is to not be on Bourbon Street. I'm always trying to get better, bigger, better gigs. But I certainly got a lot of experience playing down there.
Right.
And all the gigs I play down there are I consider to be cool gigs. There's because one's a Cajun Zydeco music. There's not a lot of places doing that.
Right.
One of them we're doing New Orleans R&B, like 50s and 60s stuff. That's really cool. And none of them are top 40s like rock and roll cover bands.
Right.
I know there's a lot of that
there's
down
a lot
there.
Of that on Bourbon Street, but you're not.
Yeah.
And one of the gigs you're playing, we had a great guy I love, great drummer, great keyboard player Charlie Kohlmeyer, who was on the podcast a few months ago. You've been playing in a group with him for many years. At
I
Cafe
have.
Beignet,
we just played together today.
Nice.
And that gig originally was Kevin O'Day's gig.
Kevin O'Day, and, a guy, a beloved New Orleans musician, great drummer.
He was a dear friend and really good mentor to me, and he got us the gig down there. In fact, he was playing Cajun Zydeco music with us at the Bayou Club, and he didn't even know I played the piano because he only seen me play accordion.
Oh.
And when he got the offer for the gig, it was me and him and Chris Cenac that had been playing bass. The three of us had been playing a lot together at the Bayou Club. And he said, "Hey, man, I got this gig. I think our Cajun band could probably do it." And I said, "Hey, Kevin, you think it'd be cool if I play piano when we do New Orleans R&B tunes and stuff?" And Kevin said, "You really play the piano? You promise you can play it, right?" I said, "Yeah, I really could do it, man." And he got us the gig, and we did that gig all the way until he passed away. And he started incorporating Charlie Kohlmeyer and gave him a weekly down there. And now that Kevin's gone, Charlie does most of them with us. And Charlie's a great player. So him and Chris and I got a good dynamic down there. And we do a lot of different tunes and stuff to try to keep it fresh.
Right, right.
Which is really, really great gig.
And you know, to spend all that time with Kevin, I mean, that's what a prince of a guy, man. That must have been a huge shock it was a shock for the whole community to lose such a young guy, man.
It was a big loss. And you know what was funny? I had about 7 or 8 years where I wasn't playing any drums gigs at all, and I was playing with Kevin the whole time. And then I got another gig on drums playing with that same Cajun band I had been playing with. But now I'm back on the drums on Friday and Saturdays with them whenever I can make it. And when I started playing drums again after all that time with Kevin, I was just night and day a way better drummer.
Yeah, just and I know conceptually from playing with him.
From playing with him, right. And a little bit of playing with Carlo, just those two guys and some of the other guys. But Kevin had a huge impact on my musicianship and all that
concept.
Stuff.
Oh, sure.
Man, what a amazing player.
Yeah, I mean, between those two guys, holy moly, man. That's talk about the catbird seat.
Exactly. That's like two of the best players in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
And I almost got a chance to start playing with Russell Batiste right before he passed.
Oh, man.
Because I met him we did a Kevin O'Day tribute, and he was there. And
right.
We were talking, and he got my number, and he was like, "I'm going to call you. I got this regular thing at Le Bon Ton and this and that." And so almost got in with him.
So you play with a lot of dead musicians.
Yeah. When I go to find a sub on a gig and I scrolled through my phone list, like, it seems like half of them are all dead. And I can't delete them from there.
I know. My wife was saying last night, she was going through her phone. She goes, "When you have people that have died, you take them out of your phone?" I said, "No.
No.
No.
No, I just look at them and remember them as I'm looking for a player for a gig."
Right.
I'm like, "Oh, man, that guy was great."
And do you still call the number?
I haven't, but maybe I should.
Yeah,
maybe
I was just thinking I should start doing that too, just to see what happens.
I freak some little 18-year-old kid out. And
yeah.
Shit, maybe they'll answer. Who knows?
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be great.
Well, so I played that first gig with you, that Mardi Gras gig, and loved it. And then you started calling me for some other gigs, and many of them I haven't been able to take for one reason or another. But I did wind up on that Cajun gig with you a couple of times. And that guy Roland Cheremy, man.
Oh, man.
The fiddle player. Yeah. Holy shit.
Straight out of Cajun country. He was raised speaking French. Speaks in French better than English. Yeah, he's great. I enjoy playing with him. That's one of the guys that taught me Cajun music, because I'm not Cajun, but I learned the stuff, and now I do it.
Well, he's the kind of guy that gets in front of an audience, and they can be from anywhere in the world and see him playing that music, and they know this is the real shit.
And even if he just starts talking, they get captivated just watching him talk, because he's got such a cool accent and stuff like that.
Right, such an authentic character.
That's been a really great gig. We've been getting all sorts of amazing players to come through to that gig, which has been awesome. We just did one last week, and Alex McMurray came and played guitar with us.
Oh, cool.
So you never know who. Bill Richards has been on bass, Scott Jackson. You played bass. All these amazing cats have been coming and playing.
And then, like, one of the gigs I played on... Dave Clements' nephew was playing drums, mm-hmm. Cranston's son.
Yeah, Tyler. He did the regular gig for a while. He's taking a hiatus, but he was the regular drummer for a while. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he plays great, man. If you ever look at his hands, they look just like Cranston's hands. Like,
yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah, and they just effortlessly move around the kit. I love that. And Cranston plays down there, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, actually, the first one that I played with you and Roland, Cranston was playing guitar because I think you had to go somewhere. So you got Cranston, who I think was supposed to be playing bass, but you got me to play bass. Cranston played his natural instrument guitar.
Yeah.
Man, what a fucking hothouse this is, all these guys, huh?
Yeah, and Chris Cenac is a monster bass player. He's the regular down there. Right. But he subs out a lot, and it gives me opportunity to play with all kinds of different bass players. And we don't even have a regular drummer right now. We just call different people.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity to, aside from the headache every week of having to deal with the...
Sure.
We get to play with a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And the fiddle player, Roland, he hasn't been making a lot of them lately, so... We've been getting all kind of different guys as the side guy.
And actually, the second gig I did with you at that place, which is the same room that used to be Ron Dodge's Papa Joe's on Bourbon Street.
Yeah, yeah.
That I played for a number of months back in the early 80s with Alex Chilton. And before I came and played with you, that was the last time, like 1984 was the last time I'd played that room.
All those places on Bourbon have all this history because they all been there forever.
Right.
And Papa Joe's used to be in a different location before that, and it goes all the way back to the at least the 60s, because I know friends that played at Papa Joe's in the 60s. And I don't know if that's the bar, but one of those bars, my buddy told me they had these two dancing girls, and they would put like glow-in-the-dark paint, which probably had like uranium in it or something on their whole body.
Oh.
And to try to get the guys to come in on time, the musicians, they told them, if you get here early, you can rub the body paint all over the girls.
Okay. Perk.
Perk.
Right.
I love hearing those old Bourbon Street stories.
Oh yeah. You know, when I first started playing at that place, the manager, Candy Dodge, Ron Dodge's sister, she was a former nun who had left the order, and now she was the manager of Papa Joe's, redhead, and she said, yeah, if you go across the street, this place, the Steak Pit, tell them you work on the street. They have a $2.50 ribeye sandwich that's not on the menu that they'll sell you. So on my break, I'd go across the street and say, yeah, I'm playing at Papa Joe's. Can I get the ribeye sandwich? $2.50.
I was just talking to Paul Batiste, and he was telling me that him and David and the fam, they had a gig down there in the 60s on Bourbon, and the Meters had a gig on Bourbon in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And the two of them, him and Leo, would go trade off and sit in with each other's bands and stuff. I thought that was really cool. And I also heard every club back in the 60s had a B3 organ in the club, probably to save money on a bass player. I don't know, but I heard that there was a lot of B3 organs at most of the clubs.
Well, yeah, I think that's where Alan found, they weren't called the Meters at the time. They were called like the Hawks or something.
Mm-hmm.
Heard about them and went down there and heard them and said, oh, yeah, yeah, I think I'd like to record you guys.
And I heard the locals used to go dancing on Bourbon Street back in the 60s. It's a different dynamic than what it is today.
And look, in the 70s and 80s, when I was a kid, you could walk down Bourbon Street, and there was like one great Dixieland band, now they call it traditional jazz, one great trad band after another.
Yeah.
At one time, they had this guy who was an albino clarinet player, and he played so fucking loud that you could hear him off mic. He had the loudest sound. You could hear him out on the fucking street down the block, man.
And Al Hurt had a club down there.
Yes.
And I heard Duke Ellington did like a two-week gig at Al Hurt's club at some point.
That makes sense.
A lot of cool, a lot of big-time players were down there doing stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't always like, you know, nowadays you see all the classic rock cover bands. I mean, you know.
That's what it was when I started playing down there, and it was even worse. It's actually got a little better in the past 10 years. There's been better music down there, but it was just 80s like rock and roll covers everywhere. And you get sick of it. And I'm just thinking to myself, why do these people want to come from out of town and come see this music when we have amazing local music that they could be, and nobody's playing any of that stuff? So that's one of my missions with Broke Down Streetcar, is to try to keep that old stuff alive.
Well, 50s. Talk about that. So you have this band, Broke Down Streetcar, that plays 50s and 60s New Orleans music.
Yeah, we haven't been booking the band a lot lately, but we did do the Washington Parish Fair recently, which was a great gig.
Okay.
And
North Shore.
Yeah, and which we had Tyler Clements on drums and Chris Sinek and Jason Mingledorf on that gig, and it's just a killer.
Another former guest of ours.
Yeah, he's great. He's one of my favorite sax players.
You know, I ran into his car one time, and he doesn't even hold a grudge.
He's the nicest dude.
And it was parked at the time. But
yeah.
I can laugh about it.
Yeah, go laugh about it. But no, that's...
Laugh it up.
Broke Down Streetcar is the project that I book when I'm doing 50s and 60s New Orleans
right on.
Tunes.
Well, you know, we're kind of in the winding down of the podcast here, but there's another band that I saw, and I was surprised that this is... Because I know some of these guys, this band, Captain Buckles.
Absolutely. We're doing a bunch of original tunes with that band.
So that's Alex Mallet, Smitty Supab, another guy. And so you're in that band. And you guys have a new record that's recorded recently?
I think they've released one, or maybe about to release a second single. They're doing one single at a time.
Right, yeah, that's the way nowadays.
And, new material coming out. They have another keyboard player. They have Phil Breen, who's a great keyboard player.
Sure, I know Phil. Philly, yeah.
And so when I come and play, I'm playing second keyboard. I play percussion. Sometimes I play guitar.
Okay.
And just fill in whatever is needed on that song. And sometimes I'll sing some of mine. We make an effort in that band to do a lot of original tunes.
Right.
So I'll do a couple of my originals. And Alex Mallet has all these great instrumental, like funk originals. And
yeah, Alex is a tremendous player, man.
Really
good. Played with him for years with Lynn Drury, and now he's in John Papagrow's band. So we
spectacular.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
So I enjoy playing with that band. So I've been trying to be a little choosy about who I play with. So I've left a couple bands behind and moved on to other things. But the bands I'm playing with right now, I love playing with all of them. It's just great. Everybody's great.
Right on, man. So cool. I'm so happy for you, and so thrilled to be, you know, playing with you in all these capacities. You know, the whole arc of our knowing each other.
Absolutely.
Well, it seems like we have a podcast on
the end. Yeah, let's get out of here. Yeah,
thank you so much, Rob.
Oh,
and
you've been great.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And as always in the Trouble Men podcast, we like to say, trouble never ends.
Hey, listen, man, the struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.
Boo ball in the sunshine and white ball in the shade. And now sitting here looking at a bumblebee flying by overhead. The grass is long, I'm singing songs, thinking about the right words to say. Feels kind of cloudy for a sunny day. Just hanging from the trees up above an empty chair. The sound of somebody working next door just riding through the air. And I can feel I'm slowly sinking down, but I don't care. You gotta get it where the getting's good. You got to get it where the getting's good. Gotta get it with 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 getting's good. I might even take a nap. I lie down just to try to take the weight of my head up off my back. Didn't get much done today, and there ain't nothing wrong with that. If I could do it all over again, I'd say, you got to get it where the getting's good. You got to get it where the getting's good. You got to get it where the getting's good. You got to get it where the getting's good.
get it, get it, get it, get it.